Welcome to intermission. Yeah, intermission. Thank you.
So you ready to do this? All right, let's roll with the news.
It's time for the most insightful wrestling show today. Wrestling Weekly is on the air.
Are we ready?
I'm very excited.
Please join us in the chat room at WrestlingWeekly.com to submit questions for tonight's guests.
Hello, this is Mick Foley, and you are listening to Doc Young.
He is my friend.
And the inimitable Les Thatcher.
He's a legend. He's one of the greatest of all time.
You're listening to Wrestling Weekly.
The most dominant force in this business today.
And it all starts tonight.
Yeah.
We're the stars of this piece of...
And now, your host for Wrestling Weekly, Doc Young and legendary Les Thatcher.
Doc Young here with you, and, well, not quite Les Thatcher. Les is a little bit under the weather tonight. So, in his place, we got the inimitable, as Mick Foley would say.
Is that a word?
No. Brian Alvarez is with us on the program. Brian, thanks for filling in on such short notice. But, you know, we got the best co-host that we can.
Cool. Well, thanks for having me with 1 minute notice.
I don't know what else to say, Brian. how have you been since the last time you've been on the show? You had, of course, your big showdown with your co-host on the Brian and Vinny show, Vincent.
Yes, young Vincent. I don't think I've been on since that, have I?
No, you haven't.
It was fine. And I think that was the most surprising thing of all was it was one of those things where I must have had karma built up because everything about the whole experience was just, it went perfect. I mean, it was one of those deals where I look back on it and I think, okay, if I could have done something different, one thing different, what would I have done? And I really can't think of anything. It was all, I mean, it went shockingly well. And the match ended up all right, which I think is the biggest miracle of anything. And no one got killed. No one got hurt. It was a million times better than the hair match. So I was happy with everything.
And your grandma was very proud.
She was very proud. She predicted. We actually did a deal. I don't know if this. I think this ended up on one of the videos. But the cameraman went around and was polling everybody. Who do you think is going to win? And
right.
My grandmother said, Brian, of course. And then she goes, I hope he doesn't hurt him. He's lost so much weight. Just bring Vince, who outweighed me by 100 pounds.
Right.
She was concerned that at 240, he might be too fragile for the wrestling business. Yeah.
Well, you actually, you got one over on myself and Les. We both said that you were going to win that match.
It's crazy how those things work.
Yes.
What can you do?
I knew somebody was going into the kiddie pool, though.
Well, I actually thought of that, like, it was after I watched Raw when Edge was thrown into the bay or the sea or whatever he was thrown into. And it was just one of those things where ever since Nitro in, like, the mid-90s, whenever they went to Club Lavella, somebody would always get thrown in the pool. And it was always my favorite moment of the year because they were being thrown into water.
Yeah.
And they would sell it like they'd been thrown into lava, or they'd taken a bump off some like the top of a building on the thumbtacks on the cement or something like that. And I just thought that's the greatest thing in the world because it always gets a huge pop. Nobody gets hurt unless perchance you can't swim or there are sharks in the water or something like that. But
right.
It's very very safe.
Or stingrays.
Sure. And I just thought, okay, this is perfect. We've got to somehow find a kiddie pool. And Buddy had a child, and they had a kiddie pool, and so it was perfect.
These guys in the chat room right now, in our live chat room, they're really mad that you didn't win that match.
I apologize to everybody.
He gave it his all, guys.
I gave it my all. Maybe next time.
I'm kind of surprised you didn't have commentary on that, though.
Well, actually, we are doing a DVD. That was one of the deals after we started really raking in the cash, was if you donated $25, I think it was, you get a DVD of everything with the
right
all the skits and everything, but we just did commentary for the entire DVD a couple of days ago, and DVD should be mailed out, I believe, like the beginning of November, but we did commentary, me, Vince, Buddy, and Tony, for the entire thing. So there will be commentary.
That's kind of surreal, isn't it, to like be on commentary while you're in the ring?
Actually, no, because years ago when I was in high school, we did the backyard group, the YWF, and we had TV on public access. They had a lottery, and we won a TV slot, which was basically half-hour weekly in the same time slot.
Mm-hmm.
And so we did, like, 110 episodes or some crazy number. But I was like and this is a horrible, I shouldn't even make this comparison, but I will anyway. I was the Antonio Pena. I did everything.
Yeah.
And that meant I was doing commentary on all the matches, and I had to pretend that I wasn't actually the guy in the ring wrestling. I would do commentary on my own matches and pretend I was an unbiased commentator. So I'd done this for years.
Well, yeah, it works then.
Sure.
But everybody knows it's you, though.
Now you're
famous, Brian.
Yeah, sure.
You're like, I don't know who that guy is in the ring, the little one, but he's handsome.
He's great. What a physique on that guy, all 110 pounds of him.
So what have you been up to since then? I know you're still doing Wrestling Observer Live with Dave Meltzer.
Yep.
Over at WrestlingObserver.com. You've got the Brian and Vinny show. You've got, of course, Figure Four Wrestling, the newsletter.
The newsletter and the Daily Show.
So you're quite a busy guy.
Yeah, I'm always doing something involved with wrestling, sadly. But, you know, it's most of the time, there was a period, and I will readily admit this now, it was about 2 months ago, where just one night I just hated it all. Because it was the week where there were 13 straight days of programming on television. And I'd never seen anything like that before. I mean, even during the boom period in the 90s, I mean, there were some weeks where you'd have a 3-hour Nitro and a 2-hour Raw on the same night and have to watch them all and then get a newsletter done for the next day. But never before 13 straight days of national television. And it was a brutal period. And about day 8, I was just like, I hate all of this. I hate this. It's too much stuff. And it slowed down a little bit, or I've gotten into a groove, or I don't know what the deal is, but I'm fine now. And there's enough good stuff that I can still find all of this enjoyable. And there's some horrible stuff as well.
All right.
But, you know, the thing I've always said is I either want good stuff or I want bad stuff. It's the period where you've got a long stretch of just boring stuff, just the same old stuff every week. That's the stuff that really grates on me. And we've had some periods like that over the past year, but now you've got Angle and TNA. You've got UFC, there was the big Pride pay-per-view, you've got Kevin Federline on Raw.
Good Lord.
Best heel in the business.
Yeah.
So on and so forth. So there's a lot of stuff to keep things interesting.
America's most hated.
I don't know if I'm the only one, but I am a huge fan of Kevin Federline on Raw because he is a perfect heel for John Cena. I mean, he's perfect.
Yeah, but he's got X-Pac heat.
He does, but he's the only guy, I think he's the only heel since Cena jumped to Raw, where when he's in the ring with Cena, nobody cheers him.
No,
I mean, when Edge feuds with Cena, you always got some people cheering Edge, and last night against Johnny Nitro, you know, they booed whenever, you know, Cena was doing spots with Nitro, but whenever he went after Federline, he was like the biggest hero in the entire building. And
well, there's got to be somebody cheering for Federline.
But I'm not there in the building.
Like Brittany's back there somewhere going, hit him, baby, one more time.
Yeah, she's far away from this wretched business. But no, I just think that he's a great character. It's fresh and it's wacky, and it got him a lot of publicity last week, and I have no problem with it.
It works. You
it's
notice
just
they
a little
didn't invite
slimy, them. Little skinny manager.
Yeah.
It's a perfect role.
You notice they didn't invite the Jackass guys back.
No, they didn't. You will not be seeing them anytime soon.
No. We were talking about this last week, me and Les, about Steve-O and his great selling. And I just wish Umaga would have gave him a couple more stiff ones after, you know. After that,
I think there may have been a point. I think there may have been a point where Umaga realized he's out, and so that was the end of that. Because there was that point where he just picked him up and sort of dropped him on his head, and you know, I think that because he did an interview and said I realized that laughing was dumb,
Right.
And he beat the hell out of me afterwards, and he did. And
right,
and
backstage too.
Yeah, Steve-O claims that he remembers nothing after one of the spots or something like that. So it may have just been a deal where Umaga realized, my God, this man's out. And that was the end of that.
Did you, there was a story in Foley's book about, one of Foley's books about Al Snow doing that. Do you remember that story?
Doing what?
Foley was supposed to hit him, I think, with a chair, and Al Snow started laughing. And so he did it like three more times, and Al Snow just kept laughing. Mick's like, just forget it. And they went backstage, and Al couldn't remember anything that happened.
Yeah.
And he said, after you hit me with that chair, I was out, man. I don't remember nothing.
Yeah.
So they always teased him about that, and they said, you know, they should put Foley and Al Snow together in a no cell in the cell match and stuff like that.
Well, they had Kennel from Hell. It couldn't have been worse than that.
Let's get to some of the news that's going on this week. Of course, we're coming off the big Pound for Glory pay-per-view from TNA. And, well, according to reports, the TNA pay-per-view was Larry Zbyszko's last appearance for TNA. Now that he lost the loser leaves TNA or loser gets fired match against Eric Young. Plans, you know, like we said, plans can always change. But what's being reported right now is Larry Zbyszko's out. Les talked last week about Larry wanting to play some more golf and things like that. So.
And those 3 dates a month in TNA. Whew.
I know. That
those really put a damper on your golf game.
It trains you.
Yeah, it really does.
Monty Brown, of course, has not signed a new contract with TNA. He currently has no deal with the company right now. Brown was not booked for the TV tapings on October 9th. He's not at the tapings tonight. And he was not at Bound for Glory either. PWInsider.com is reporting that that Monty Brown was backstage last night at Raw in Chicago. So... the reports going around is that Brown is open negotiations with WWE right now, and while he's still working without a deal with TNA.
They have been talking about Monty Brown for a long time, and I think the idea right now is he's not great in the ring. He had a really good match, the last pay-per-view match he had, but overall he's got a well-paying job outside of wrestling, and you know, the deal is TNA could not pay him enough to take time away from that job to do any dates where he'd make a couple $100.
Right.
So that was the big issue. And with Monty Brown, he's a great athlete. And if WWE signs him and just says they give him $150,000 downside, and he's on the road 4 days a week, he could improve very quickly as a worker. And the one thing that they've seen him right now is that he's a good talker, and they need a good talker on really all three of the brands. So I think there's probably a very good chance he will sign very soon.
Could be. Earlier last Wednesday on the Howard Stern Show, Chris Canyon returned to the program. During the show, Stern got Ric Flair on the phone to talk about WWE. Supposedly, Ric Flair was the representative that was going to tell Canyon why he was fired. Canyon's been, of course, claiming that he was fired because he was gay, openly gay. The show had actually hoped to have booked Vince McMahon, knowing Canyon would be there, but McMahon was unavailable. He wasn't in his office. They also talked to Triple H, but he was at the overseas Japan Raw show. So according to reports, both Canyon and Flair went back and forth over Canyon's claims that he was fired because he was gay. Flair said that Canyon wasn't a great worker anymore, and that's why he was let go, not because he was gay, but... Flair could not exactly tell him why. He kept going back and forth, you know. He was saying, well, you don't have it anymore. And then he was like, well, I don't know why you got fired. But he was supposed to be the guy to come on the show and tell Canyon why he got fired. Canyon was like, you know, I was good enough to be on TV from 95 to 2003, you know. So it was actually pretty entertaining, but Ric Flair didn't really come off very well. He kept contradicting himself in it.
I don't know what the, I don't know why Flair actually ended up on the show, to be honest with you. I don't know if, I don't know what happened. I think they wanted Vince, and Vince wasn't available or whatever, like you mentioned, and somehow they got Flair. But the thing with Flair, and the thing with anybody in WWE is, I mean, if you ask Flair, why was Chris Kanyon fired? Ric Flair's got no idea.
Right.
He's got no earthly idea. And probably nobody in the company really has any earthly idea except Vince McMahon and a couple of others.
Right.
But, you know, Flair's whole argument was, you're no good, or you don't have it in the ring anymore, or what the whole deal was. I don't really know why Kanyon was fired, obviously, but he wasn't fired because he was gay. Because there are individuals in WWE that are gay and have been there for decades. So being gay is not a reason to be fired in WWE.
Well, Kanyon claims it's because he's openly gay and because he came out of the closet.
But here's the problem with that. When he's done other interviews where that's not what he said. He said that he mentioned it to somebody in Ohio Valley, and WWE somehow found out and ended up doing the deal with Undertaker in the box, and then he was fired, which would mean that he was not openly gay. And, you know, he's made some – there have been a lot of contradictory statements, like, you know, he's made the comment that my – the fact that I was gay was no secret, and Flair's like, I never knew that.
Right.
And such and such. And, you know, I talk to people that never knew. And I don't think it's not as open as I think he claims that it is. And there are people in WWE where they don't have to be walking around in a dress. Everybody knows they're gay, and it's no big deal. And I think that was sort of Flair's point. And I also don't agree with Flair when he says that you were fired because you can't work or whatever. Because Kanyon was a better worker than many people in WWE. I think the whole deal was they didn't see anything in Kanyon. They thought he was an average worker. They didn't think he had a very good look. And he was just a guy. And that was the end of that. And this was a period before they had the third brand. And, you know, if Kanyon hadn't done all this stuff, maybe he'd be back in ECW right now. I don't know. But I think that his attempts to make a gigantic deal out of this, all it's going to do is result in him, you know, having a few months on Howard Stern and probably not ever working really in the wrestling business again.
Yeah, he kind of already blew the TNA thing.
Yeah, the TNA thing's been blown in the WWE thing right now. You know, unless they decide, wow, well, we can get some publicity from this guy, in which case, as they've done in the past, it'll be a two-month deal.
Right.
But, you know, if you're looking for a long-term stable job, this is not the way to go about getting it, so.
I agree with you, but I hope Kanyon does get the answer he's looking for. I think he's just looking for closure right now as far as this whole situation. I'm not sure if it even has to do with him wanting to wrestle anymore. He's, what, late 40s, and, you know, he's had a good long career.
Actually, I think he's just mid-30s, believe it or not.
Is he really?
Yeah.
Wow. Well, you know, like I said, I hope he finds the answer he's looking for and gets some closure out of this.
Yeah.
Moving on, earlier this week, this is a strange story. Earlier this week, WWE put up a statement that Corporal Kirshner had died last Sunday.
It's a fantastic story.
Of natural causes. The story turned out to be false, as Corporal Kirshner, whose real name is Mike Kirshner, did an interview with Slam Wrestling talking about the fact that the story was false. Just the fact that he did the story says that it's false. PW Insider then posted the following statement from Kirshner's mother. It says, "My name is Jean Kirshner. I'm Corporal Kirshner's mother. Well, I thank you for your condolences. They are not necessary because Mike is alive and well. Who Thomas Spears is, I haven't had a clue. And my condolences to his family, but he was never the Corp. I assume this is some kind of mix-up in WWE because the information came from them. All I can tell you is I wrote the book, and my son is thankfully alive and well." Signed, Gene Kirshner. WWE.com has since pulled the story from their website. We did report this last week. We usually double check something like this, but when it came from WWE's website, you know, I took it as a fact. And that's why we printed it. We do apologize for the error and any grief this may have caused his family, fans, or friends, or, of course, Mike Kirshner, Corporal himself. Weird story, though, Brian.
I saw it on WWE.com, as a lot of people did, and they're not, you know, WWE.com obviously has certain problems with factual things and such, but they'd never screwed up a dude dying before.
Right.
And so this is a guy that was in the second WrestleMania, and you would think that, you know, if he died, WWE of all places would probably know such things.
Right.
So they put it on their website, and it was the assumption, obviously, that he's dead. Because they posted many, many, many death notices over the years, and they've all been people who have passed away.
Mm-hmm.
So many major websites, including ours and the Observer site and everywhere else, you know, ran with the story. And it turns out he was not, in fact, dead. So, of course, all these major websites did their retractions and their corrections and everything like that, except for one site. That would be WWE.com.
Right.
They didn't apologize. They just took it down and pretended like it never happened. And I thought that was classic.
Yeah. But it was odd, though. I mean, how can you get the... And who is Thomas Spears?
He is probably just a guy... And there have been many, many people like this. Everybody's seen the obituaries where just a random guy dies, and in the obituary it's like, this guy wrestled for WWE as so-and-so.
Mm-hmm.
And he never did. It's just a story that he's told his whole life, and probably everybody believes him, and he passes on, and it's part of the information given to the reporter, and it goes into the article, and such is history.
Wow.
There was a guy, actually, that I believe died this week, and it claimed he was a free bird, and he wasn't. So
I've never heard of something like that.
Oh, yeah, this happens all the time, actually.
Wow. No, I never heard of that. Well, that's probably who he is. Now it's going to have to say on his epitaph, here lies Thomas Spears. Sorry.
Not Corporal Kirshner.
Not Corporal Kirshner, right. The Wrestling Observer, I think you've taken a look at them once or twice. They're reporting that WWE has hired Tully Blanchard as a road agent. Well, they call them producers now, but Blanchard's going to be replacing the spot Jimmy Garvin had held with WWE before he quit last week. As always, it's a 30-day trial run to see how he does. This is... basically the same process that Ted DiBiase, Ricky Steamboat went through before becoming full-time employees with WWE. And Tully was at the Raw taping last night in Chicago.
They need... Someone actually mentioned this to me the other day. TNA, this is what they're missing is great road agents. And it really hit me at the pay-per-view when there was a spot, it was a Bound for Glory, where Christian and Rhino are having this match. They're on the apron. Rhino pile drives him off the apron through a table to the cement, and then 30 seconds later, Christian's in the ring doing spots. And you never see something like that happen in WWE because there's Ricky Steamboat and Fit Finlay and now Tully Blanchard and guys of that sort who are going to say, wait a second, if you take a pile driver off the apron through a table to the cement, you're never getting up. You're not going to be up in 30 seconds doing more spots. And I think that that's something that TNA needs. They've got Shane Douglas, Terry Taylor, Jerry Lynn. And God bless, you know, Jerry Lynn and Shane Douglas, but they spent a lot of their careers in ECW where you took a lot of pile drivers off the apron through tables to cement and jumped right back up. And, you know, that was fine during a period where this was something new. But when I really look at wrestling, I see things sort of going back to a more psychology-based style to get over because people have seen everything now. And now spot fests are mind-numbing. And in order to make a spot fest work, you've got to work in some old-school psychology, and the same with really any major match. And TNA, I think they need to go back to that.
Yeah. These things just... When you do it like that, it just isn't special anymore, you know?
No, I mean, the thing to me was they did a spot at the pay-per-view where Abyss went face-first in a thumbtacks, and it meant nothing.
Right.
And, you know, 6 months ago, that would have been the biggest spot on the whole pay-per-view. But every single month, somebody goes into thumbtacks, it doesn't mean anything anymore.
Or they're falling from 20 feet.
Sure.
It's speaking of TNA, their website now has some video footage up of Kurt Angle's one-on-one meet and greet with the TNA fans at the CompuWare Sports Arena from Sunday before the Bound for Glory pay-per-view. Angle was unable to attend the regular Interaction Fan Fest on Saturday due to his wife going into labor early. I thought that was reminiscent of Vince McMahon, Triple H, and Stephanie.
Yeah. Actually, they made it an angle first.
Yeah.
They pretended she was in labor when she actually wasn't. So.
Yeah, that actually made it more interesting. It was like McMahon jinxed it, you know.
Well, CNA gets credit for the guy couldn't show up Saturday, so they just brought him in Sunday and gave everybody what they what they'd promised, even though, you know, I don't think they owed it really to the fans since the guy's wife went into labor, you know what I mean?
Right.
It wasn't really something they were required. It wasn't like they you know, they didn't induce the labor, but they still went out of their way to give the people something, so that was good.
Yeah, and there would have been a lot of mad people at that fan fest if they didn't know they could come see Kurt Angle on Sunday. CNA knew that, but, you know, it was classy of them to do that. According to reports, Ring of Honor has attempted to book Kurt Angle for a series of events, but they're said to have been turned down and told Angle's not going to be taking outside bookings right now. While it's possible that Angle could work for Ring of Honor down the road, it's not the case at this time. TNA, they have their Kurt Angle, and they're holding on to him, baby.
Oh, yeah.
They ain't letting him go anywhere. But I think part of it is, you know, they don't want him to go out and get injured in any show.
Yeah, I think they're concerned with Angle working in any match with the local promoter and something going horribly awry. I think he's going to end up, you know, they'll probably let him show up for appearances in here and there, and he's got the show in Monterey coming up. They've got the Hermie Sadler shows he's going to be doing in mid-November. So he's going to be doing some outside dates, but they're all TNA-affiliated dates. And I think after he's done a couple of matches, perhaps on pay-per-view and that sort of thing, they'll probably let him do an outside booking here or there. But I think before he's even had his first match, it's not like you want your local Windy City Wrestling to have the first Kurt Angle match outside WWE.
Right, that too, yeah, absolutely. But, you know, like you said, down the road, Ring of Honor, of course, they're going to take good care of him.
Yep.
And some of these bigger indies. But I had actually, I don't know if you knew about this, but Wrestling Weekly, you know, went involved with an indie show a few weeks ago.
I did hear about this, in fact.
And I had actually called TNA at one point to try to get one of their stars. I'm not going to say who, but the prices were absolutely outrageous.
Oh, yeah.
And I know everybody's got to go through the office now, and I know they're taking a big chunk of it. The office for any of those outside bookings. So if you want contracted TNA wrestlers, you better be prepared to pay.
Yeah.
So I want to go back for a minute to the, of course, the hiring of Tully Blanchard. And I wanted to make this statement. I was speaking last night on the phone casually to a guy who used to wrestle in WCW. And I told him, I was like, you know, I just told him, you know, they hired Tully Blanchard. And he's like, oh, wow, you know. And we were like, I told him, I said, all these agents, you know, are some of the greatest minds in wrestling. Why is the show so bad? And basically, you know, we came to the agreement that, you know, the road agents don't write the matches.
No.
And they're supposed to do what Vince tells them and what the storyline is, and then they're supposed to go from that, which is why I think Jimmy Garvin kind of quit. I think he thought he might have had a little more say-so than he actually did end up getting.
I think Jimmy Garvin never wanted to be hired, to be honest with you. I was surprised that whole thing went down, and then a week later when he was gone, I was not surprised.
Right.
So I think the thing with the shows is there are a lot of guys that I don't even really know how to explain this. You're not having a lot of new guys coming up that really know what they're doing in the ring. And part of that is because you're getting a lot of guys coming up that have never had a chance to work with a Ricky Steamboat or a Fit Finlay or a Tully Blanchard on an actual show a number of times. And I think that's the key. You've got a bunch of guys in developmental now that are all working with each other. I mean, when you're the MVP and you're down in Deep South and you're working with, I don't know, just some random guy. I don't even know who's in Deep South these days. But we'll just take what the hell's that guy's name? Let's throw out a name. Sideshow Bob. Sideshow Bob down there is working in Deep South with the MVP, and they're both at the same level, and they're never going to improve. Right. I mean, you may figure out, okay, well, this is some basic psychology for a wrestling match, but all the little tiny tricks, the stuff that makes Finley so great today. He never does a dive. He never does some wacky high spot. He never does some complicated, you know, reversal or anything like that. Everything is very, very basic. He's got great timing. He knows what to do and when to do it because he's been around forever.
Right.
And wrestled a million different guys. And you don't have that anymore. And the MVP, this poor guy gets called up. He has no clue. And he's going to get destroyed. He's already been destroyed, basically. And, you know, then you're back to the same old crew you've had for 8 years. And every now and then a new guy comes up and gets squashed quickly. And then you're back again. And same thing pretty much goes on forever. I mean, Carlito, I'm always ripping on Carlito. And I'm sure he's a horribly nice guy. But he's horrible.
We go that far, but
I don't even know. When he was in Ohio Valley, before he came up to WWE, he was just freaking horrible. And when I heard he was being called up, I just thought, why? He's so bad. So he gets called up, and they put him on SmackDown. And, like, on day one, he was great.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, what the hell happened to this guy? I don't know if it was a giant confidence boost or something like that, but he was really good. And he stayed really good for about 2 months, and then he fell off a cliff. And now he's back to the Ohio Valley Carlito, and, you know, he's unmotivated. And it's one of those deals where you're digging yourself into a hole. You're unmotivated, so you're not trying very hard. But when you don't try very hard, you're even more horrible. And you're more horrible, so they don't give you anything, and so you're even more unmotivated, and it's just this, you know, you're sucked in.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Carlito's, and he's not the only one. He's far from the only one. They've sucked everything out of Chris Masters. He's doomed. Spirit Squad doomed. Just so many guys doomed. And I don't really have much of a solution to the problem, but that's one of many.
Yeah, that's true. Carlito, it just seems like the whole show is on cruise control right now, you know, as far as the way they do stuff in the ring and stuff like that. But they've kind of always been on cruise control in WWE. You see guys who did great things in the Indies and Ring of Honor and things like that, and Ohio Valley, and then they come up, and it's just like, don't do that no more. Just do the basic.
Yeah.
And
they can't.
Right.
The problem. You're asking them to work a style they can't work.
It's not good. Speaking of Ring of Honor, the Ring of Honor World Tag Team Champion, Claudio Castagnoli, had a tryout at Deep South Wrestling last week. According to reports from the tryout, he did very well, and many are expecting he's going to be offered a deal, if he hasn't already by now. Castagnoli's size is going to help his chances. He's a big guy. He's a big, tall guy. He needs a little
work. Huge guy.
He needs a little work on his physique, I think. But he's a big guy. And that's something WWE is always looking for.
He was down in, when I went down for the Battle of Los Angeles, and he's always Claudio, all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And it's great. It's great.
I've seen Claudio live before. And there's nothing like it, man. He's great in the ring, and he knows how to do things with body language and facial expressions, other than, you know, just high spots and things like that. You know, he could tell a lot with just his body expressions.
Yeah,
it's pretty cool.
He's very good.
We're going to take a quick break, guys. When we come back, we're going to run down the, of course, TNA's Bound for Glory pay-per-view. And last week, Brian, I know you know we do this. We play the pay-per-view prediction game.
No.
Les
Is there
and
a pay-per-view
I,
coming up?
I don't think there's one this weekend. But Les and I played the game, and we're going to find out who won, and we're going to run down the show. And,
so do I get Les's picks, and if he was wrong, I get to take the blame?
Yes.
Okay.
We're going to totally blame it on you this week.
All right.
If he loses. And I don't know who won or lost. I usually don't even look. I have an idea, and I know it's pretty close. But we're going to find out when we come back right after this. You're listening to Doc Young and Brian Alvarez filling in for Les Thatcher tonight. It's Wrestling Weekly. Stick around. We've got, of course, former WCW wrestler Scotty Riggs going to be on the program tonight. It's going to be a good one. Stick around.
Wrestling Weekly will return to all the fun right after this.
What are you doing, Luke? You having fun?
I'm having a blast.
So many of these wrestling websites nowadays strongly promote their pay-per-view play-by-plays as if they were something unbelievably special. The problem is that they are not special. In fact, they're all the same. Nothing separates one from the other, and if you've seen one, you've seen them all. However, there is one site that has original play-by-play that's different from all the rest. 4WWrestling.com, a proud supporter of the Voice of Wrestling radio show, invites you to witness the ultimate play-by-play experience, live during every WWE pay-per-view. And if you're asking what makes them so different, well, 4W-Wrestling.com is the only site to put up pictures from the actual pay-per-view as it happens. You see what's taking place on the pay-per-view instead of just reading about it. If you're not buying a pay-per-view, but you're looking for the next best thing, 4W-Wrestling.com. Online wrestling evolved.
Hey, do you find that wrestling is more to you than just a passing fancy? Do you need to know more about your favorite wrestler? Do you absolutely have to know all about their history? You, my friend, aren't just passionate. You're obsessed.
Geez, you know, that information might have been a little more useful to me yesterday.
We have a fix for that.
Throw me a frickin' bone here. Need the info.
Check out ObsessedWithWrestling.com. All the info you need to know about everyone. Located at www.obsessedwithwrestling.com. Histories, title info, bios, aliases, real names.
Once again, things that could have been brought to my attention yesterday!
If wrestling isn't just a passion, then an obsession. Check out www.obsessedwithwrestling.com today.
Hi, my name is Adam Nudelman, but I play the Phantom on the radio. I'm here to remind you that, oh, screw that, my book, Mysteries of Wrestling South, is available at finer bookstores everywhere. That stupid fake voice, I hate it. I wrote a book along with Sir Adam Kleinberg called Mysteries of Wrestling. It has the questions that you wanted answered. Why does Steve Austin hate Jeff Jarrett? Are referees really blind and stupid and dumb? Who is actually the toughest wrestler in the business outside of the ring? Hulk Hogan, The Rock, Stone Cold Steve Austin, Kamala. We get down and dirty with insider facts you've never read about anywhere else. So what are you waiting for? It makes a great stocking stuffer. You're too short, you buy three of them, you get tall, you just stand on them. Mysteries of Wrestling Solved by ECW Press, written by Sir Adam Kleinberg and Adam the Phantom Nudelman. Available everywhere. It's done. The plug is done. I'm done. I didn't sell it well enough. There's naked pictures of China in there. Okay? Thank you.
Business Advances Web Hosting. With plans as low as $2.95 per month, you can get the professional web hosting solution that you need.
Visit www.businessadvances.com.
A total hosting solution at a fraction of the price.
Register today and we'll give you 100 free templates to get you started and even more freebies.
www.businessadvances.com. Simply business as usual.
Here's the latest news and information on total non-stop action wrestling. It's TNAWrestling.com. TNAWrestling.com. Log on right now and get your fix of all things TNA Wrestling. Event photos, streaming video, and all of the backstage gossip is just one click away. Plus, right now, you can find special savings in our merchandise area with a complete line of DVDs featuring Nevermore, the best of Raven, Enigma, the best of Jeff Hardy, and Phenomenal, the best of AJ Styles. Plus, all of our monthly pay-per-view events on DVD as well. And don't forget to check out photos of our lovely ladies in the knockout section. It's your online home for total non-stop action wrestling. It's TNAWrestling.com. TNAWrestling.com.
It's like a pulse that refuses to die. After 4 years, the chants are as loud as ever. These three letters changed history.
This ain't WCW!
Revolutionized sports entertainment.
This ain't Monday Night Raw!
And brought the wrestling world to its knees.
Oh my God!
Tonight, the revolution is reborn. Welcome to the underground. Welcome to the cutting edge. Welcome to the extreme.
This, my friend, is ECW.
He considers himself God's gift to wrestling, and millions of his faithful agree. With nearly 4 hours of footage and exclusive commentary and matches, this DVD chronicles Daniel's rise from Chicago's Windy City Wrestling to the Asylum in Nashville, and finally to the top of TNA. TNA Home Video presents Heaven Sent, Hell Bound, the best of Christopher Daniels. Available at most retailers and TNAWrestling.com.
Doc Young and Brian Alvarez with you at Wrestling Weekly. Sorry for the technical difficulties there on the music there. I don't know what happened. I came back and put my headphones back on, and little player was going crazy. But we are back.
Uh-oh.
And it's time to run down, of course, TNA's pay-per-view, Bound for Glory, the WrestleMania of TNA pay-per-views. It was a pretty good one, wasn't it?
Sure.
I think it got a lot of good reviews, which is kind of weird for internet guys.
It was I don't know about a lot of the reviews. I'm very skeptical.
Really?
Oh yeah. There were a couple of reviews where I read it and if it had just been one, that would be one thing. But when I read review after review after review of people claiming it was like the best pay-per-view of the year, one of the best pay-per-views they'd ever seen, TNA had turned the corner and this and that, I thought, okay, hold on a second. Something very strange is going on. And I truly believe that. And I guess that's all I'll say about that.
Of course, like we said, Les and I played the pay-per-view prediction game. Let's run down and see who was right and wrong from last week. We'll start off with the big four-way Monsters Ball match. It was Abyss versus Brother Runt versus Raven versus the undefeated Samoan Machine.
I predict Samoa Joe.
Yeah, I think you would. And Les actually did predict Samoa Joe, too.
That's right.
I like to be different from Les. And
that's your big mistake.
I know. And I went with Abyss. Because, and stupidly, you want to hear my reasons why I went with Abyss?
Sure. Anything stupid is always fun.
Yeah. I had actually felt like, you know, Abyss needs something to placate him because he's not going to be in the world title hunt. And now, you know, you had Sting coming in for the whole year. Now you got Kurt Angle coming in. So I thought they were going to give this to him and you know, let this be a monster's ball. He would be like the king of the monster ball, you know. And plus
a good one.
Halloween was coming up. So I had went with the upset. I went with Abyss.
Halloween? What does that have to do with anything?
You know, monster's ball, Abyss, he's scary, monster, Halloween.
I figured Spike Dudley looked more like someone at a Halloween party. Someone dressing up like a wrestler.
No, but Samoa Joe actually did pull that one off. He is the winner.
Oh, and while we're on that subject, Raven. Raven looked like he'd been at a Halloween party playing Playboy Buddy Rose.
I knew I wasn't going to get out of that.
With a bird cage on his head.
I knew I wasn't getting out of that without you making a Raven comment.
That's your ghoul.
Yeah, I was going to say Raven kind of looked like a
zombie.
A guy that dressed up like Raven, but, like, doesn't look like him at all.
Sure.
But he was trying to be Raven. But the next match, of course...
I want somebody in your chat room to explain to me what Raven had on his head. I thought it was a birdcage.
All right, guys, you heard Mr. Alvarez. If you know what was on Raven's head, go ahead and type it in the chat room, and we'll get back to that in a moment. Next up was the 8 Mile Street Fight. Between Rhino and Christian Cage.
I predict Rhino.
You predict Rhino?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, Les didn't. He went with Cage.
Really?
And I also went with Cage. And we're right, and you're wrong this time.
I thought, you know, Detroit, Rhino, they might give him a win.
No. Not gonna happen. Not over Cage. Not gonna happen.
Yeah.
Which
of course makes no sense when you really think about it, because Cage beat him the first time, and then Cage beat him in his hometown.
Right.
And somehow beating him twice in a row is leading to the next pay-per-view when they have a barbed wire cage match of the two of them.
Yeah, and who's gonna win that? I wonder.
God, now I predict Christian. The rest
Absolutely.
Of the thing made no sense. Well, what do you think, they'd split the win?
The one,
you know,
cool,
what I mean?
The one cool part about the 8 Mile street fight was that somebody was actually hit with a sign that said 8 Mile Road.
That's true. That's true.
You can't spell it out any more than that.
And somebody was pile driven off the apron through a table of the cement and didn't get hurt.
That too.
I'd also like to note that immediately after that happened and Christian was back on his feet doing spots, all of a sudden he was the big baby face because he was like Superman. Did you notice that? In Rhino's own hometown, he started getting booed at the end because this unbeatable man was suddenly destroying him. And when Christian put all his stuff on him and hit him with the chair, everybody was going crazy, and I thought, wow, hell of a heel there, Christian, and it sucks to be Rhino.
It really does anymore suck to be Rhino. I guess he was unhappy when his contract was about to end, and he was thinking about jetting, but they gave him a new contract.
They made him job in his hometown?
Exactly. I don't think they offered him a big push as part of the negotiation process, because I don't think he's won since he's re-signed.
It was a hell of a run here for Rhino.
Yes. Poor guy. I feel sorry for him, really. I mean, but yeah, Cage won that. So that was a point for myself and Les.
Rhino was getting so popular too. Remember that when he first cut that promo going nuts on Vince, everybody was jumping up and down and screaming and going crazy.
Yes.
And they did nothing with him.
I liked when he was going at it with Abyss.
Yeah.
And the fight backstage, and he threw him through the wall.
Yep.
He said that wasn't planned.
Oh, good.
and they got mad at him for destroying the set, but
oh, it's his fault that the 320-pound man hit the wall and it broke.
Yeah, because it is just it looked like a drywall. So yeah, he's gonna go right through it like it's paper. But yeah, he got in trouble for that. The guys in the chat room right now are saying they thought it was a Hannibal Lecter mask that Raven was wearing.
I guess so.
Somebody did
had
say
a beak.
That he actually had a raven in his head.
That could be. Yep, that could be.
Somebody says it was another chatter's tighty whities on Raven's head.
Huh.
We're getting Raven's like gonna kill us for this. Let's move on. Senshi versus Saban, of course, the X Division title match. Les and I went with Senshi on this one. We felt that the story of him being champion wasn't played out yet, and there were some good things to come for him still. Of course, we were wrong.
I don't know who I would have predicted.
Chris Saban is the new X Division champion now.
I mean, they had ideas for Saban for a long time, but those sort of went out the window when the thing with Nash didn't get over. So I probably would have predicted Senshi, but, you know, this also makes sense and doesn't matter, really, the X Division. It has been rendered meaningless, so whoever holds a title is basically meaningless.
Yeah, you can't really get Les started on the X Division because, oh, my God, will he go off. What is no limits, weight limits? What is the X Division? Can you explain it to me? And I'm like, no, Les, I can't. He's like, there. That's my point.
Yeah.
And he's got a point.
Yeah. I don't know what the X Division just used to be the best wrestling matches. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I guess the X Division title was like the independent wrestling title. Like there's the indies nowadays, it's not like the territories where, you know, back in the day, if you were in a major company and you went to the territories, it was like you still worked a similar style as you'd work on the big stage. Nowadays, it's totally different. Nowadays, there's like the WWE style, which TNA does most of the time. And then there's the indie style, which is completely different. And they're incompatible is the weirdest thing. Mm-hmm. I think if you can work the WWE style, it's so old-school psychology-based that if you took it to the indie scene, it would probably work in a lot of places.
Yeah.
And I think that the indie style is so different that if you had one guy doing it on a major show, like a WWE or TNA show, he would be over, which is what happened with Samoa Joe until they made him WWE Samoa Joe.
Right.
But WWE is not going to have a full roster of guys working that style, so it's incompatible, and it's very strange. But that's what the X Division used to be. It's like the normal division was WWE style, and the X Division was indie style. And it was something different, and it was the one thing that TNA had that separated them from WWE. And that's the most important thing. They're not beating WWE. They're not going to have better workers. They're not going to have better talkers. They're not going to have bigger stars. They're not going to have better production. They're not going to be running in bigger arenas. The one thing they had was you've got these guys working a totally different style than you'll ever see in WWE, even the Cruiserweight division.
Right.
And they killed it.
Yep. Now, I think they're trying a little bit too hard to try to be like WWE.
Yeah, no one wants a fourth brand.
Right.
We don't even need a third brand. It's getting to 1-7 now.
That's true. Moving on, it was the loser gets fired match between Eric Young and Larry Zbyszko, which cracks me up because Eric had already been fired.
Yeah, it was
why is he on the show in the first place now?
It was the best when Mike Tenay, they're coming out and the announcer's like, it's loser gets fired. And Tenay has to go, well, it's loser gets fired or stays fired.
Right.
And I thought, oh, that was one of the things about the last month that was just so utterly stupid. I mean, you've got the main event of your biggest show of the year, and it's a retirement match. If Sting loses, he's fired. He retires or whatever. He's gone.
Right.
So why, 3 weeks before the biggest show of the year with a retirement stipulation in the main event, would you just throw on TV a random match where the loser gets fired, and then the very next week he's back?
Mm-hmm.
It just totally killed the stipulation in the main event. And then I won't even get started on the fact that they didn't even bring Sting in for the last set of taping. Can you imagine if Rock and Austin was the main event of WrestleMania and they decided, we don't need Austin on TV the last 2 weeks. He just won't be here.
Yeah.
In a million years, that would never happen.
I absolutely agree with you on that one. Eric Young did win. He is going to stay. Larry Zbyszko's out now. Like we talked about earlier, he's probably going to stay out. That's the plan right now. So that's a point for myself and Les, because we both went with Eric Young. Les is in the lead right now with 4-3.
Of course I am.
The next match was, of course, the tag team championship between AJ Styles, Christopher Daniels, versus LAX. And once again, I did not want to go with the obvious.
I picked LAX.
I did, too. I'm with LAX, baby, because I'm La Raza, like you. We're La Familia.
That's right. I don't know what that means, but I presume it's something good.
We're family.
Oh, yeah.
We're Latins.
Sure.
Les had went with Styles and Daniels on that one, but what did you think about the match?
Did he have a reason for it?
Because they were the champions, and he said it's been switched back and forth, and it's starting to get ridiculous. And if they don't leave it on them, then it's going to water down the belt.
This match, the actual wrestling was very good. All four guys are really good, and they worked their asses off, and it was a good match. Everything else about it, I hated. And I think the problem is because it was on a show with so many things that were just mind-boggling to me. And they had a cage match. And first off, I was trying to figure out, why are they in a cage? And I thought about this when I realized that they didn't have a cage hanging from the ceiling that they could just drop around the ring.
Mm-hmm.
They had to make it. They had to freaking make the cage in the middle. I paid $3 to watch them set the cage up, if you do the math or something like that.
That's old school stuff.
Oh, Jesus, I don't need to see old school stuff when I'm paying $30. So they're putting this cage up, and I'm thinking, okay, why are you guys in a cage match? Last month, you were in an Ultimate X match where there are no DQs, so if anybody ran in, who cares? And there was a clean finish. So what required a steel cage? And then some other dude was like, well, LAX attacked AJ and Daniels in Mexico.
Right.
I thought, what the hell does that have to do with anything? A bunch of Mexicans going to go to Detroit in a bus and they might run in? So anyway, I'm thinking, okay, why do they need a cage? All right, fine. Let's just say they had a cage just for the hell of it. They needed a cage on this show.
All right.
So then they get in the cage, and it's not just four guys in the cage beating each other up. Instead, you've got one dude on the apron and his partner in the ring, and they're enforcing tags. And I thought, what happens if you just get in without a tag? Is there going to be a DQ in this cage match? And then a gimmick got slipped in, and they had to hide it from the referee because, you know, you might get DQ'd if the ref saw a gimmick in this cage match. So this annoyed me. And then finally it got to the point where I'm like, okay, I'm just going to accept that this is a regular tag team match in a steel cage. Fine. So as soon as I accept that, what happens? All four guys get in the ring, and they just start having a free-for-all. And the ref just stands there.
Mm-hmm.
And so they kept having this free-for-all, and it lasted the rest of the match. So then, I believe it was Daniels got the gimmick. LAX had been using a fork. And he starts using this fork, which earlier in the match would have been a DQ, apparently, because they had to hide it from the referee. And the announcers are going, well, he explained to the ref that Homicide had used it earlier, so he should get to use it.
Wow.
And I thought, oh, so there's a negotiation now in this cage match.
I don't remember him actually saying that.
Yeah, and I kept thinking, I don't know. It was just like, just do a match.
You think they're stealing WWE's writers or something?
I don't know. I was like, why would you have the rules just randomly change in the middle of the match? It started at, and they did the same thing actually on Impact the week before, except it was the opposite. They had a match, and everybody was brawling all over the building, and it was like a Falls Count Anywhere match, and the referee was just like, okay, everybody brawl, have some fun. And then it broke down into a normal match. Like, they all ended up on the apron waiting patiently for a tag.
Mm-hmm.
Why?
Who knows?
Whatever happened to just having a match?
True. But LAX did come out on top. So that ties it up, and it leaves it to the main event. Of course, Jeff Jarrett versus Sting. Loser goes home.
Loser leaves forever. I predict Sting wins.
I predicted Sting wins, too.
What did Les predict?
Les actually predicted Jeff Jarrett.
Really?
Yes.
Well, that's not a horrible prediction, because this was one of Sting's last dates.
Right.
If he didn't re-sign, he was done. So
right.
It would have made sense for him to be leaving forever. But
right. And really, the only reason I went with Sting is because Les had went with Jarrett first, and we had agreed on too many things lately. And different.
If you would have asked me 2 weeks before, I would have predicted Jarrett.
Yeah.
But in the last week, I pretty much knew he was coming back.
But then
back,
I thought, Sting never held the title. It would be nice for Sting to have that title on the way out, just, sort of like a la Trish Stratus.
You mean this version of the title?
Yes.
Okay, because it is the NWA title, so.
Well, it is, but it isn't,
Sure, it's the new, okay, makes sense.
But, he would call himself the TNA champion, not the NWA champion. But, it's sort of the same thing. It's why I picked Trish Stratus to win the championship, even though we knew she was leaving after that match. I figured it was going to run with the same kind of thing. And I was correct. Sting did win. He's the new NWA TNA World Heavyweight Champion.
Well, see, the reason I would not have said the same thing is because having somebody win the woman's title on the way out and then vacating it and setting up a tournament, that's one thing because nobody really cares about the belt anyway. And it's sort of a feel-good moment that she won a belt on her final night. But I don't think you would ever see WWE giving a dude the world championship in his final match and then having him vacate it and retire and setting up a tournament. I think that belt is such that, in any world title belt, I think it's such that you probably don't want to be doing that, but I don't know.
I figured that would be exactly what they would do, because in my mind it seemed like doing a sort of tournament to fill the title, the vacated title, would bring some more publicity for the title and bring it out there. I mean, because the women's title has been just, like a toy. lately.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't really have any meaning. But I figured, you know, Trish would win it, and they would have a tournament, and the tournament would build things up.
What a tournament it's been so far.
Oh, yeah. They had, what, Braun panties. They had
sure.
four people at once in one match.
Yeah.
I thought they were actually going to do it right.
No. Foolish of you. Foolish.
Very. But that's what ended up happening. I ended up beating Les in the pay-per-view prediction game 5-4.
5-4, wow.
5-4. There were a couple other matches, of course, that weren't announced at the time. What happened in those matches, Brian?
Well, we had the Kevin Nash Invitational something or other.
The you should have seen, Les called it something last week that had about 20 words in it. I can't remember what it was, but he was close.
Vaguely reminiscent of what this actually was, but nobody would have won this one because nobody knew who the participants were, and in a million years I would not have picked Austin Starr, the renamed Austin Aries. He won the whole deal. It was a mess.
It was. I would have went with Shark Boy, of course.
Oh, yeah. That wasn't happening.
He's
it was another one of those matches where you had a midget, you had a girl, you had a bunch of jobbers, you had some dudes you hadn't seen in a while, and you had a handful of X Division guys, and in the end it was Austin Starr and Jay Lethal, who after eliminating everybody in the Royal Rumble style match, it just became a normal match, but at least that's the way they've always done it.
Mm-hmm.
But it was another rule change right in the middle, which I don't know why that's necessary, but we'll just pretend it is. And then Austin Starr eliminated him, Kevin Nash appeared in the ring, and presented Austin Starr with a bowling trophy, which was legitimately the best comedy on the whole show. And then they left. They didn't beat him up or nothing. It was just, that was the end.
Yeah, I really thought that they were going to, you know, they were going to stretch this out somehow and have Kevin Nash, since he's the king of the X Division, beat the winner up, but that didn't happen.
Or even Alex Shelley and set up a feud.
Yeah, but he, you know, he
gave they just gave him the bowling trophy. Then they may have all went bowling.
It's pretty possible.
Sure, we don't know.
I got backstage, he's like, give me my third place trophy back. You know, I was in the, I was on the Wrecking Crew Bowlers team. But there was one other match, pre-show match.
Oh, yeah, Lance Hoyt and, oh, Jesus. What the hell's that guy's name? Team Canada, help me out here. Bobby Roode.
Bobby Roode.
What a hell of a debut for Bobby Roode.
Yes.
Bobby Roode was doing this long, all these vignettes. Bobby Roode's getting a new manager, this, that, and the other thing. And so he finally goes, next week on TV, I'm going to introduce my new manager.
Right.
And I thought, oh, this should be a good one. So the next week on TV, he introduced two breasts, but not the actual manager. He said, I'll introduce my manager at the pay-per-view. And I thought, whoa, this will be something else. And then they put him in the dark match, not on pay-per-view. And so to this day, if you didn't get spoilers, you have no idea who Bobby Roode's manager is. So I think a new booking committee came in and decided that there was nothing in Bobby Roode and he's in big trouble. But that's just my feeling.
Yeah, that's pretty bad when you hype something up for the pay-per-view and they put it on the pre-show.
Yeah, that was great.
Bobby Roode, you're in trouble, my friend.
He's in big
trouble. You need to go up there and talk with Dixie a little bit and get your spot back. Because
I have no idea how Tracy is going to add to the Bobby Roode act except two more breasts.
Yeah, what cracks me up is that, you know, Bobby Roode had all these interviews. He was, you know, with these great managers from the past and Heenan and, you know, all these guys, and they wanted to be his manager. He's like, no, don't want Tracy. You can't.
Yeah, I don't. Yeah, I don't get it. I guess we'll find out. Maybe. I don't even know anymore.
You know what? I don't think we will find out. I don't think we're going to.
Maybe it's a swerve, and she's going to be the wrestler, and he's going to be her manager. Maybe that's what we'll discover.
Could be.
Yeah.
Of course, she has no one to wrestle. They don't have a women's division.
Well, that's the swerve. She's going to work with the men.
That would be different. That would be interesting.
Thinking outside the box in the wrestling business.
Yeah, not so much different, but something that hasn't been done in a while since China, you know.
Sure. I'd
like to see something like that. Of course, Tracy would get killed by anybody. She's no China. But that's how it went, guys. The TNA Bound for Glory pay-per-view. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to have our featured guest, Scotty Riggs from WCW. American Males. Sing it with me, Brian. American Male. That song is so catchy.
I don't even remember the words.
We're going to see if you can sing it, too. Like, live on the radio. That's going to be cool. he's going to hang up on us. We're going to have like 45 minutes with nothing to talk about.
if you both start singing the American Male song, I'll hang up on both of you.
We're going to take a break, guys. When we come back, of course, like I said, Scotty Riggs is going to be here. You're listening to Doc Young and filling in for Les Thatcher, Brian Alvarez. We're going to be right back after this.
We know, you hate this part, but Wrestling Weekly will return after this short break.
Why are you doing this to me?
So many of these wrestling websites nowadays strongly promote their pay-per-view play-by-plays as if they were something unbelievably special. The problem is that they are not special. In fact, they're all the same. Nothing separates one from the other, and if you've seen one, you've seen them all. However, there is one site that has original play-by-play that's different from all the rest. 4WWrestling.com, a proud supporter of the Voice of Wrestling radio show, invites you to witness the ultimate play-by-play experience, live during every WWE pay-per-view. And if you're asking what makes them so different, well, 4W-Wrestling.com is the only site to put up pictures from the actual pay-per-view as it happens. You see what's taking place on the pay-per-view instead of just reading about it. If you're not buying a pay-per-view, but you're looking for the next best thing, 4W-Wrestling.com. Online wrestling evolved.
Hi, my name's Adam Nadelman, but I play the Phantom on the radio. I'm here to remind you that, oh, screw that, my book, Mysteries of Wrestling South, is available at finer bookstores everywhere. That stupid fake voice, I hate it. I wrote a book along with Sir Adam Kleinberg called Mysteries of Wrestling. It has the questions that you wanted answered. Why does Steve Austin hate Jeff Jarrett? Are referees really blind and stupid and dumb? Who is actually the toughest wrestler in the business outside of the ring? Hulk Hogan, The Rock, Stone Cold Steve Austin, Kamala. We get down and dirty with insider facts you've never read about anywhere else. So what are you waiting for? It makes a great stocking stuffer. You're too short, you buy three of them, you get tall, you just stand on them. Mysteries of Wrestling Solved by ECW Press, written by Sir Adam Kleinberg and Adam the Phantom Nudelman. Available everywhere. It's done. The plug is done. I'm done. I didn't sell it well enough. There's naked pictures of China in there. Okay? Thank you.
He considers himself God's gift to wrestling, and millions of his faithful agree. With nearly 4 hours of footage and exclusive commentary and matches, this DVD chronicles Daniel's rise from Chicago's Windy City Wrestling to the Asylum in Nashville, and finally to the top of TNA. TNA Home Video presents Heaven Sent, Hell Bound, the best of Christopher Daniels. Available at most retailers and TNAWrestling.com.
Business Advances Web Hosting. With plans as low as $2.95 per month, you can get the professional web hosting solution that you need.
Visit www.businessadvances.com.
A total hosting solution at a fraction of the price.
Register today and we'll give you 100 free templates to get you started and even more freebies.
www.businessadvances.com. Simply business as usual.
It's like a pulse that refuses to die. After 4 years, the chants are as loud as ever. These three letters changed history.
This ain't WCW!
Revolutionized sports entertainment.
This ain't Monday Night Raw!
And brought the wrestling world to its knees.
Oh my God!
Tonight, the revolution is reborn. Welcome to the underground. Welcome to the cutting edge. Welcome to the extreme.
This, my friend, is ECW.
Hey, do you find that wrestling is more to you than just a passing fancy? Do you need to know more about your favorite wrestler? do you absolutely have to know all about their history. You, my friend, aren't just passionate. You're obsessed.
Geez, you know, that information might have been a little more useful to me yesterday.
We have a fix for that.
Throw me a frickin' bone here. Need the info.
Check out obsessedwithwrestling.com. All the info you need to know about everyone. Located at www.obsessedwithwrestling.com. Histories, title info, bios, aliases, real names.
Once again, things that could have been brought to my attention yesterday!
If wrestling isn't just a passion, but an obsession, check out www.obsessedwithwrestling.com today.
News and information on total non-stop action wrestling. It's TNAWrestling.com. TNAWrestling.com. Log on right now and get your fix of all things TNA Wrestling. Event photos, streaming video, and all of the backstage gossip is just one click away. Plus, right now, you can find special savings in our merchandise area with a complete line of DVDs featuring Nevermore, The Best of Raven, Enigma, The Best of Jeff Hardy, and Phenomenal, The Best of AJ Styles. Plus, all of our monthly pay-per-view events on DVD as well. And don't forget to check out photos of our lovely ladies in the knockout section. It's your online home for total non-stop action wrestling. It's TNAWrestling.com. TNAWrestling.com.
It's like a pulse that refuses to die. After 4 years, the chants are as loud as ever. These three letters changed history.
This ain't WCW!
Revolutionized sports entertainment.
This ain't Monday Night Raw!
And brought the wrestling world to its knees.
Oh my God!
Tonight, the revolution is reborn. Welcome to the underground. Welcome to the cutting edge. Welcome to the extreme.
This, my friend, is ECW!
Doc Young and Brian Alvarez back with you on Wrestling Weekly. I don't know why, but Scotty's phone is, well, he's not answering it, and I keep
getting that. He's got a nice Halloween message.
He does. We should actually play that on the show for everybody.
We should.
But then Scotty would be really mad at us. I don't know. I always wanted to do something like that, a segment like that, where we'll call wrestlers.
Well, we're not going to give his number. We just
Well,
be...
true.
Well, and clearly, I mean, this is more than just, hey, this is Scotty, leave a message. He wants, you know, he put some work into this.
That's right. People should hear it. If he doesn't call, if he doesn't answer next time we call him, we'll play it on the air. We'll play his Halloween message.
Maybe he thought it was like 6 Pacific.
No, he's living in South Carolina, so he's Eastern. So he knows. I mean, I talked to him just last night, and I told him we're going to give you some more time because, I mean, we just called to confirm, and we ended up talking for like 3 hours about everything, about wrestling and all kinds of stuff.
No wonder he didn't pick up.
Yeah, so we're probably still sleeping.
Yeah.
So I told him we'd give him more time. I said we'll call you about 10 after, so. I don't know. Maybe he messed up or I don't know. It could be anything. Who knows? But anyway, we're going to take some questions from the chat room right now.
Fire away.
I don't understand what this question means.
Read it anyway.
It says, Doc, question for Brian. Did he see the Tilda Bang during Raw?
No, but I heard about it.
During Raw last night when they showed the clip of me. What's a Tilda Bang?
The exclamation point with the squiggly line in front of it. It's a hat we sell in our store, and this person got it on Raw.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. I was very excited.
No, I must have been in the bathroom or something.
I saw it. I give you a big thumbs up.
Oh, I know what you're talking about. The tilt. Yeah.
Yeah, Tilda Bang.
Didn't you invent the Tilda Bang?
No. The first person I ever saw do the Tilda Bang was Dean from Death Valley Driver. but apparently people have seen the Teal Day Bang years and years and years back in random screw-ups on BBS boards and that sort of thing. But he started using it for wrestling reports, and then I stole it unabashedly from him. So there you go.
So was that like it was on a sign? Is that what happened?
No, yeah. We actually have hats with a Teal Day Bang on the hat.
Mm-hmm.
And he was wearing the hat, and they
oh, cool. So that was like
up on TV.
That was like a nod to you.
It was.
Sweet.
I was very proud.
You guys got to get some more WrestlingWeekly.com signs at Raw, guys. I mean, come
sure.
on.
Sure.
Don't leave me out of this.
And put F4WOnline.com on the other side.
Right.
While you're at it.
just make it a big billboard type thing.
Sure.
Jubb says...
We're actually trying to get a guy to build a Teal Day Bang costume. Where he'd like... I picture like... You know those things you roll up carpet in, those big tubes?
Yes.
You put him in the tube, and you cut out holes for his arms, and then you attach a squiggly line to the side, and you make him go through the audience like that, leaning a little bit to the side, so he's italicized. Dr. Keith is going to do it someday.
You're a marketing genius, Brian.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. We're going to have a talk after the show. We're going to have to come up with some Wrestling Weekly ideas. Jubb says, will you be coming down for Bola 2007?
Tell Jubb's I'm sure it can be arranged.
Hang on there just a second, Brian. I'm getting a call, and it is Scotty. So let's take a quick break, guys, and we'll get Scotty on. We'll come back right after this.
Hi, my name is Adam Nudelman, but I play the Phantom on the radio. I'm here to remind you that, oh, screw that, my book, Mysteries of Wrestling Solved, is available at finer bookstores everywhere. That stupid fake voice, I hate it. I wrote a book along with Sir Adam Kleinberg called Mysteries of Wrestling. It has the questions that you wanted answered. Why does Steve Austin hate Jeff Jarrett? Are referees really blind and stupid and dumb? Who is actually the toughest wrestler in the business outside of the ring? Hulk Hogan, The Rock, Stone Cold Steve Austin, Kamala. We get down and dirty with insider facts you've never read about anywhere else. So what are you waiting for? It makes a great stocking stuffer. You're too short, you buy three of them, you get tall, you just stand on them. Mysteries of Wrestling Solved by ECW Press, written by Sir Adam Kleinberg and Adam the Phantom Nudelman. Available everywhere. It's done. The plug is done. I'm done. I didn't sell it well enough. There's naked pictures of China in there. Okay? Thank you.
He considers himself God's gift to wrestling, and millions of his faithful agree. With nearly 4 hours of footage and exclusive commentary and matches, this DVD chronicles Daniel's rise from Chicago's Windy City Wrestling to the Asylum in Nashville, and finally to the top of TNA. TNA Home Video presents Heaven Sent, Hell Bound, The Best of Christopher Daniels. Available at most retailers and TNAWrestling.com.
Business Advances Web Hosting. With plans as low as $295 per month, you can get the professional web hosting solution that you need.
Visit www.businessadvances.com.
A total hosting solution at a fraction of the price.
Register today and we'll give you 100 free templates to get you started and even more freebies.
www.businessadvances.com. Simply business as usual.
Hey, do you find that wrestling is more to you than just a passing fancy? Do you need to know more about your favorite wrestler? Do you absolutely have to know all about their history? You, my friend, aren't just passionate. You're obsessed.
Geez, you know, that information might have been a little more useful to me yesterday.
We have a fix for that.
Throw me a frickin' bone here. Need the info.
Check out obsessedwithwrestling.com. All the info you need to know about everyone. Located at www.obsessedwithwrestling.com. Histories, title info, bios, aliases, real names.
Once again, things that could have been brought to my attention yesterday!
If wrestling isn't just a passion, but an obsession, check out www.obsessedwithwrestling.com today.
information on total nonstop action wrestling, it's TNAWrestling.com. TNAWrestling.com. Log on right now and get your fix of all things TNA Wrestling. Event photos, streaming video, and all of the backstage gossip is just one click away. Plus, right now, you can find special savings in our merchandise area with a complete line of DVDs featuring Nevermore, the best of Raven, Enigma, the best of Jeff Hardy, and Phenomenal, the best of AJ Styles. Plus, all of our monthly pay-per-view events on DVD as well. And don't forget to check out photos of our lovely ladies in the knockout section. It's your online home for total nonstop action wrestling. It's TNAWrestling.com. TNAWrestling.com.
Doc Young and Brian Alvarez with you on Wrestling Weekly, filling in for Les Thatcher, the poor man, Brian. I can't get over how horrible he sounded when I called him earlier.
I didn't hear him, but I'll take your word for it.
I just hope he gets better. I was just, wow. It's not good.
Unfortunately, I didn't get to hear him either, but I was looking forward to actually doing an interview with him. I'll just go ahead and interrupt and say hello to everybody out there and just throw myself right in the mix of this weekly debacle here.
Yeah, I was going to give you a huge, big introduction, like announcer style.
Okay, then I'll hang up and call back. How about that?
No, that's okay. Scotty Riggs is with us, guys, former WCW star, and, of course, ECW. That's where you started, right?
In ECW? Actually, it started way back when, and North Georgia Championship Wrestling, and then went from there to Peach State, then went from there to WCW, from there to USWA, from there to back to WCW, then to ECW, then to TCW, then to XYZ.
Wow, what a trip.
Exactly, with a couple stops in NJPW, New Japan Pro Wrestling.
How is it out there?
Oh, dude, man, if I could live anywhere else in this world, I swear I would live in Tokyo. Just the way that the fans treat you, the way that their organization treats you, it's a whole different culture of respect. It's still seen, wrestling is still viewed as a sport out there. They like the strong style. They really believe and really put over just the credibility of the athleticism out there, and that's why the fans, they sit there and they study. I mean, the crowd is so different. They sit there and study what you do and applaud at such different times. Well, here in the States, all they got to do is step to the curtain. You either get booed or you get cheered or you get something thrown at you. It all depends on how these fans feel about you.
So does
what year did you go to New Japan?
The first trip I actually made over there was in 96.
And was that through WCW?
Yes.
Okay.
When you wrestled,
it was right after me and Bagwell wrestled at the first sold out pay per view.
Okay,
so it might have been 97.
When you wrestle out there in Japan, are you a little more nervous because you know they're paying more attention to the technical aspects of the match?
Well, no, not actually. I mean just the way I was trained and the way that I really. The guy that trained me, Ted Allen, he was helpful in training Arn Anderson, Big Boss Ben, Ray Taylor, Tracy Smothers, Randy Anderson is one of the referees from WCW, and he really, for the first 6 months that I trained with him, he really, really taught me a lot of the grappling game and the reversals and how important they were, you know, and just making holds work, because that's what people still believed in was the actual wrestling part of it. And one of the matches I had out there actually with El Samurai, we started off, and he was a cat that was just the most quietest guy that sat in a very, very far corner of a locker room, mask on, just sitting there all meek and mild. But as soon as he walked out in that curtain, it was just like he flipped the switch and became this almost like a Sabu-type personality, where he just looked to do everything in the world to take your head off. And the crowd's out there watching what we're doing. They're all quiet. We go outside the ring. Long story short, we're hitting each other with chairs. Referee battle on the outside of the ring, get back inside. I'm like trying to get my wits about me from getting conked in the head. So I catch him with a knee, snap marry him over, put a rear chin lock on him, sat there for like 5 seconds, and the crowd applauded.
Wow.
And I was sat back. But the whole time we were fighting outside, they just kind of like stood around and watched.
Yeah.
But as soon as we went back to wrestling, boom, they applauded. It was like, yeah, you know, that we took, you know, a street fight battle type thing out of nowhere that even happened and just went right back into wrestling. And that's, you know, again, they believe so much in the sport of it over there and the honor of it over there that they actually sat back and, you know, it was a little intimidating at first, just the quietness of this huge arena, or even like the Corrigan Hall, which is a little bit smaller, so it's like the ECW arena. I mean, you went from that to the Sumo Palace, to the Tokyo Dome or whatever. Even with large arenas, they were sometimes pin drop quiet. Mm-hmm. It was really amazing. But over here, you can have 25 fans, or you can have 25,000 fans, and they're all screaming, hooting, hollering, and going bonkers, and it's just for the first match almost all the way through.
Wow.
So it is really just this, the fans are so different, but it's actually, it's a treat to go over there.
Now, you were a face while you were out there, right?
Yeah. Well, actually, it's hard to say, that, again, because of the nature of it, there's not really a face or a heel. It's like sometimes, like me and Bagwell actually wrestle against each other in a couple of single matches with NWO versus WCW personalities. Mm-hmm. Marcus had been in the NWO. And just long story short with it, next night we had to be put together as a tag team, and we wrestled Chris Jericho and Juice on the Liger. And then the next night, Marcus was in a whole other match, and I was teaming with Jericho against Liger and Samurai.
Wow.
So over there, it's almost like, again, back to the sport of it.
Mm-hmm.
They have a good guy and a bad guy, but they actually will mix and mingle you for competition's sake.
Have you ever had, a Japanese fan want you to hit him?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah?
Well, the guys that went over there with the first time, it was Chris Jericho, Mark Bagwell, or Buff Bagwell, whichever you want to call him, Scott Norton, who is like a wrestling god over there, and myself. And Brad Armstrong was supposed to go, but he actually got injured, so he couldn't make the trip. But, you know, I mean, we're walking out there, and here's Norton with this, you know, 6'5", 6'6", guy with 330-pound big barrel chest, deep voice. And the first thing one of these Japanese kids does is run up to him and just throws his chest up there, and Norton just whacks the fire out of him. I was like, Scott, what are you doing? He goes, oh, here in Japan, they love stuff like that. Japan love you hit them. American, you know, they want you to hit them. I'm like, dude, if you did that in America, you get arrested for assault, and all these guys be trying to sue the heck out of you.
Absolutely.
And the next thing I know, the guy runs past Norton, same cat, runs past Norton and sticks his chest out at me, and Norton goes to hit him. So I did my best Chris Benoit chop at him and hit him right in the throat, and the guy loved it.
Oh, my God.
So,
did you spend any time in the
unique situations, you know?
Yeah.
Did you spend any time in, like, the New Japan dojo?
No, actually, I didn't, because the first time I went over there, we were there for 21 days, and out of those 21 days, we had 17 matches. So, I mean, 17 days of wrestling, so we had 2 days off in Tokyo, 1 day in Sapporo, and 1 day, another travel day to come back from Sapporo to Tokyo. And the only time I really got to see any, like, dojo stuff that those guys did was every day, their young guys would set the ring up, and every day they would train. You know, they'd have Kensuke Sasaki in there and some of the other guys, Hashimoto, and those guys would actually get in the ring with these kids and just run them through everything. And I saw this one guy, Kensuke, picked up the board and whacked the guy in the head with it. And it's one of those old push-up boards that the Japanese guys carry around with them. It's a big, thick, like, 2x4 looking piece of wood, and it was about 2 feet long. Kensuke just picked up and whacked the kid right in the head with it, and the kid's eyes crossed, full blood starts trickling down, but they made him keep doing the tackle, drop down, leapfrog, arm drag, drop kick, take the head over routine they were working through to keep the guys moving and running, and he made them do it like 5 to 10 more times. And then the guy completely collapsed, and they picked him up, had him on his back, sat him in the corner, and gave him a little bit of water.
Wow.
And, I mean, but that's just the way they treated the young guys.
That was like a regular deal.
Oh, they made them work their butts off, but they earned everything, and then probably a few years down the line, you know, that kid right now is probably one of their top young stars. Who knows, you know? He either progresses through to being a tremendous superstar because he takes the beating and earns respect for what it means to be a pro wrestler in Japan. That's the one thing it kind of lacks here in the States, you know, and me and Doc were talking about this last night a little bit as we were chatting. Just the fact that the kids here need to learn, you know, a little more respect for things and what wrestling really means. It's not all sports entertainment. There is a part where you got to learn how to work hurt. You got to learn how to work with injuries. You got to learn respect for what the Jack Briscoes, the Harley Races, the Ric Flairs, all those guys back in the 60s and 70s, the Ernie Ladds, the Dick Slaters, those guys that paved the road for us to even be a part of professional wrestling, you know, for driving on the road and working through injuries, Paul Orndorff. So all those guys paved the huge road for us to be on. So, and they all worked hurt and then traveled miles and worked hurt. Nowadays, a lot of guys have guaranteed money contracts and, you know, they sprain their big toe or they do something and they still get paid. Didn't have that back then.
Right. Scott, I have a question for you. How long were you in WCW before they teamed you up with Marcus Bagwell?
I had actually been there about maybe a year, maybe a little over a year and a half, right in that range where I was just working on a nightly deal. I was working TVs, dark matches. I was on the road some. I'd be a dark match on a pay-per-view. They'd bring me in TVs, pay me a lot of times. Again, I wouldn't work because they just didn't want that at that time. We were just mainly doing TVs. They want to beat me, but then again, I wasn't experienced enough to do anything either, and so there was nowhere really to send me that they were actually dealing with. And I had met Jerry Lawler, who was running USWA at the time, met him at an independent show on Thanksgiving and went to work for those guys at USWA for 8 months. In 95, from January of 95 to August of 95, learned a tremendous amount of respect for the road, tremendous amount of respect for the business by wrestling 6 nights a week for $40 a night with a little bit of extra pay if you did well on shows and houses drew well and stuff like that. And you get a little bonus paycheck every 2 weeks. It might be an extra $100, maybe $200. So, you know, you got some extra pay here or there, but you know, I just learned so much on the road from that time. And then Jimmy Hart had seen me in a music video that Mary Marcus had done for MTV's Buzz Clips for that old group, AHA.
Mm-hmm.
Kepper Rogers, one of our producers for our show, was trying to get out of really just producing the TV side of wrestling and was trying to get into more production, things of movies, and maybe television, and so he, just to put on his resume, he was doing some stuff for some musician groups, and he got contacted about putting a story to a song that AHA was coming out, and he put a story to it. He brought me and Marcus in together, brought me in from Memphis, did the video. Jimmy Hart saw him working on it, and the Patriot had just left. They tried to put Marcus together with Alex Wright doing the American-German, you know, allies type thing.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't get over it all, so next to him, Jimmy Hart, got Kevin Sullivan to call me. Kevin, we talked for about a month, then brought me in to Orlando in August where we were doing our Saturday, and or not really Saturday, but our pro tapings and our syndicated show, worldwide tapings. And they put me and Marcus together. We had one match with Blue Bloods, which was Eaton and Regal. And the next, you know, we were shooting videos, and American Males were born, and we had our first big match in Fall Brawl against the Nasty Boys. Next match, we were World Tag Team Champions of the Northern Meat.
Wow.
So
I guess that was your big break.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, that's one thing was, is I got lucky. guys from Arn Anderson who told me just to get out of here. You're going to get boxed in. Bischoff was taking over at the time. You're going to get boxed in one view. And that's just the view they're going to have of you. You're going to get stereotyped, but you're a young, good-looking kid with a lot of talent, a lot of potential. Your attitude's right. And you just need to get out of here and go learn this business and get prepared for it. And if your break comes, it'll come. And it did.
Yeah.
So I just took some advice from a guy who, you know, saw something in me that a lot of the other guys, Dusty Rhodes, would give me some of the same advice. But Arn was the first one to really pull me to the side and sit down and say, hey, you got to get out of here. Your only break that you'll ever get, maybe with either company at the time, is to get out of here and go somewhere else and really, really learn this business on the road in front of a live crowd, not on TV, not on a few shows here or there, but the only place you can probably learn, he said, like maybe USWA or any other independence you can actually get to. And so just timing and fate was on my side. I went to USWA and went to work for Lawler. So.
If Brian wants to know if you and I could do a duet of the American Males theme song.
No.
When kidding. You see him coming, better run for cover. Girls, you don't need a weekend lover.
What'd you think when you first heard that song, when they go, here's your new music?
Well, I mean, the only story of it is they pulled me and Marcus in at Universal. They told us to put some outfits together, something matching, so Marcus had put his brain, you know, a little bit of work, and we only had, like, 4 days to put everything together. Put some outfits together that at least were matching, some blue jeans thing and some, you know, some vest things and stuff like that. We sit out there, and we have, like, maybe 15 minutes before the matches, and Jimmy Hart sent us music. He's like, oh, guys, you're going to love this. You know, Jimmy, because that high-pitched boy is fine.
Yeah.
Okay. You're going to love this. It's a little bit of Devo mix with this and that. And it starts off with that, wow, yeah. I mean, Marcus sitting there kind of like, you know, it's got that little thump to it. We got our sat with our fingers, and we're looking at each other with little grins. All of a sudden went, American male. I swear to God, me and Marcus looked right at each other at the same time, wide-eyed, jaws dropped, going, oh, my God. And we totally both stopped snapping, and Jimmy's just loved this. There's that Devo thing right there, guys, boom. And then I was going to kick him, boom. That's weird. When you see him calm and butter, you know, that deep voice at least saved it for us. But bless Marcus's heart, he was so excited about it, just the fact that finally had a tag team that was something that we had our individual music, we had an individual thing where they shot a video on us. It was a black and white video. And it was actually something that he could actually claim for himself, because when him and Tuco were partners, he, you know, they gave him Tuco's music for their tag team. When it was Patriot and him, it was Stars and Stripes, so they used, you know, the old God Bless American music, known as Stars and Stripes.
Yeah.
This was the first time that actually they had made music that was just for our team, which was me and Marcus as the American Males. So he was so excited just to have his own identifiable music, in a sense. But then it took him forever just to get that. And as goofy as it sounds, it took me, you know, just a couple of years to get it. So, yeah. You know, it's all good.
Paul NJ21 in the chat room, he wants to know about the clap gimmick.
What do you want to know about it? It did not relate to any other three-letter initials. Let's just go to that real quick. But that was actually Paul E's idea after being Scotty, RVD's best friend, as Oki as that started. Even though me and Rob had been best friends for about 12, 13 years at the time, it was just something that we were making fun of the American Males, the entrance, and it was kind of also a playoff of, because that's when me and Marcus did our thing, we had the hands up in the air, we were clapping, you know, it's kind of like that cheerleader type thing almost, and it was just something that got the crowd to interact with us as we went up to the ring.
Mm.
And so he basically said, you know, Scott, he goes, your work rate is impeccable. It's something that will get the fans will like you when you're wrestling, but they need something to identify with you. And if we can make fun of the American males, your old entrance thing with Marcus, if we can just really buckle out fun that we're gonna combine a song that's gonna make fun of the males singing, we'll make fun of the music you actually used, and Harry Slash, who wrote it and produced it and everything else, his band did the song and everything else, actually sent me a copy of it because it got trashed. My old copy I had. And just a long story short, when I finally heard it, but if you actually would listen to the words of it, it's 10 times worse than the American Males. But it was one of those things, we just did it, and I can remember it aired on a Friday night, just a thing I did. We taped it in Gwinnett County as a service center there, my debut with the entrance and everything else, with the network, with Cyrus and Steve Carino, and God, I can't remember, Jack Victory and Rhino and myself, we were on the ring, we were doing a clap thing, and kind of introduced it. The next night, we were in Ohio for an actual show, a Friday night house show and a Saturday night house show, but the Gwinnett thing aired on the Friday night TNN show. And that Saturday in Ohio, we come out, there's a first clap sign. I want Scotty to give me the clap. Some chick headed up. We were like, oh, my gosh, there's a clap sign. We started just popping on it. And it just, you know, like Paulie said, it's hokey. It's stupid. It's obnoxious. But it fits your personality because you're hokey, you're stupid, you're obnoxious. So I said, yeah, you're pretty much right. And, you know, it got over. I mean, it was, and he goes, and the main thing he said, it's just like DX. Those guys are doing the stupidest of things with Sergeant Slaughter spitting,
mm-hmm.
and the mooning of people, and all the silly things they did, but it got them character, it got them persona, it got them to be schmucks, basically, and wrestling fans don't like schmucks. They hate them. He goes, but this will give you something that the people will identify with you, and then your wrestling will get you over. And just the icing on the cake there, came out to do a match in New York City with Van Dam the second night after the tag team tournament. And we were in Hammerstein Ballroom, New York City, ECW crowd, you know, New York City, ECW crowd. Play my music, I peek out the curtains, and Paul Heyman's standing there telling me to get ready to go out. I grabbed him and made him look out the curtain. And there was 80% of a New York City ECW crowd clapping. All their hands in the air, and Paul just looked at me and goes, see, told ya. So I go out there, do the thing, you know, I'm doing the clap, make the referee do the clap. As soon as they stop the music and the referee announced me, the whole crowd started booing the crap out of me, and they were going, boo, Riggs, you suck. And they just laid to me like I just robbed their grandmother and stole their purse with her, you know, all her change, her social security check in there, and stepped on her ankle and away from running away from her. You know, so it was one of those situations where it was like, you know, it just felt exactly like Paul said it was going to happen.
Right.
Just unfortunate that match in the first 5 minutes of the match, I bruised 4 ribs in my spleen wrestling Van Damme in the match. And we ended up still putting 20 minutes in because we had to.
Wow.
But and that kind of put me on the shelf for about 2-3 months. And then right after that, kind of came back for a little bit. And then was pretty much the fall of ECW being off the air. So, you know, it has its moments. And it was at a point where it could have gone either way of keeping me as the bad guy, or actually was getting over so much that could have made a big turn for me. Mm-hmm. So it was that time of wrestling where the fans were kind of choosing who they were going to cheer for. That gray area kind of came in.
All right.
Were you the first guy to take that coast-to-coast drop kick from Rob Van Dam where he goes from one corner to the other and kicks the chair in your face?
The old Van Terminator?
Yep.
Yeah.
I was the first guy on TV to actually take it.
How'd that feel?
Well, actually, the first time I took it was in Wichita, Kansas. I don't know, actually, I take it back. It was in Kansas City, Kansas, and he broke my nose in about...
Lovely.
For the second out of three times it's been broken.
Wow.
He broke it years back with a straight kick to my face, and in the town, I think it was Alma, Georgia, and splatted my nose in, and then here, about 12 years later, got me again, but this time with a chair. Instead of hitting it flat with his feet, he hit it to where it came down, the edge of it right on my nose. I do have the little notch in there from it as the one remembrance, and just my nose and everything exploded on my face. And when the pay-per-view time came around, it was time to debut. If he had a chance, I just, instead of trying to block it with my hands, I put my arm up and covered my face and said, well, if my arm gets broke, it gets broke, but at least my nose is going to be safe. But it did not feel good, and it still about knocked me out. So it was one of those things where no matter how you prepare for it, you knew it was going to hurt. You just said, well, good for business, kid. Good for business is what they always just say. If you either got something broke or something hurt, busted open, and you were staggered to the back, and the first thing the other guys would say, it's good for business. It's good for business.
I don't know how you can go on, you know, with your nose being broken and just, you know, finish out the match. That's pain.
Well, basically, I didn't, to be honest with you. All I remember is seeing a big flash of light. Things were dark for just a second. Then I opened my eyes, and it was all red. I'm still sitting in the corner. There's blood everywhere. And I just remember rolling out of the ring and hitting the ground. And I just see this faucet of blood coming down. All of a sudden, I look up, and there comes Steve Corino and Jack Victory. And I guess they were watching the monitors and saw what happened, or they were watching on the curtains or something and saw what happened. And they just come running down the ring, and I just remember doing an all-fours crawl back to dressing room, and there's a trail of blood.
Man.
Just coming straight down from my nose, and I don't know what happened. All I remember is I went to Wichita the next day and was expecting to wrestle. I mean, it was ECW. You know, you wrestle when you had a broke arm, broke jaw, broke nose. I mean, there was, you know, you worked hurt there.
Right.
90% of the guys did, so I just went there expecting to wrestle. The doctor wouldn't, Paul wouldn't, and they were just like, there was just too much of a risk being a head trauma shot, you know. So I had about 3 weeks to heal up, 3.5 weeks before the heat wave pay-per-view. And, you know, like I said, at that time I decided, well, if I get stuck in that position again, I'm going to try to cover up my arm and see if that lessened the blow. But unfortunately, that didn't lessen the blow. Just didn't get anything broke.
Yeah.
So.
Wow.
But then, of course, you know, somebody else did it on a grander scale of pay-per-view with a trash can into his own dad's face.
Mm-hmm.
And we've never been able to use it again, which sucks for Rob because, you know, at least he was the first one to do it on pay-per-view.
Yeah, that kind of gets me about Shane McMahon, but...
Well, I respect Shane because Shane's a guy who's an untrained kid who, every time that I've ever met him and ever had to watch him in the ring, he becomes I don't even know how old he is legitimately, but becomes like a 20-year-old kid again. He is full of piss, vinegar, and fire.
Mm-hmm.
And he loves wrestling so much that he will just go out there and do whatever it takes. And you won't find veterans, you won't find youngsters, you'll barely find trained athletes who want to do that. And Shane is not a trained wrestler. You know, he didn't go to a school, he didn't learn anything. He just kind of goes out, improvises, and goes with the flow, and either gets beaten up, but he's just an athlete. And for him to just try it and do it, you applaud him for it. You sometimes go, well, man, you know, you shouldn't steal somebody else's shtick.
Mm-hmm.
But for somebody who could do it, I guess it's a youngster that just doesn't know any better at the time to do it and does it, you know.
Yeah.
So,
plus, he can take those risks because he only has to wrestle twice a year. You know, the guys who are wrestling every day can't go all out like Shane does when he wrestles because, you know, they gotta watch themselves.
Yeah, but then again, those guys don't have to go to the office every day and somehow with either your head full of stitches or a concussion or a black eye or broken nose and try to make business decisions with Coleco to make toys, or, you know, this Japanese company to bring guys over, or this person do this, you know, the stuff that he has to do with international business. I think that's his main focus with the company right now is, you know, he's still got to be a white-collar person.
Right.
So, unfortunately, you know, you can't also go in there all banged up. You can't walk because your ankle's sprained and your shoulders in a sling to start meeting with other executives and have them look at you and go, I was supposed to treat this guy like a real businessman when he was just getting beat up last night by some yahoo who outweighs him by 60 pounds, and I hear that he jumped off the ring. You know what I'm saying? You know, so
right.
It has its plus and minuses either which way you look at it.
Good point. Our Wrestling Weekly listeners love road stories, and DiCapo in the chat room wants to know your best road story.
Best road story. I think I asked you about this last night. Okay, was it poop on your show?
Right.
And, okay, well, best road story, long story short, here, I've been on the road from Memphis to, I think it was Jackson, Mississippi, and back and forth, and it was to Little Rock, Arkansas. We were based out of Memphis, but it was all these back and forth towns, and it was me, and I was driving with Stinger at the time, and Lex was driving with Marcus, and they were in their car. I think Rick Steiner was with Marcus and Lex also. And I just remember Singer and I, for some reason, we're driving by ourselves, driving on the road. Got the next morning, he goes, and he's like, hey, you know, just get breakfast early, go tan, work out, do our thing. You know, that way we can get back and maybe we can, you know, go do this or something. It's something that he wanted to go do, but nobody else wanted to do. So he asked me, I said, yeah, sure. So I remember waking up that morning and I don't know what it was, but something just told me he was trying to play a rib on the Sting. So I go in, I take me a nice little poop, and I take it, knock on his door, and I put it in his USA Today.
Oh.
It's sitting right there at your front door of your hotel room. I knock on his door and say, hey, Stinger, I'm going to go down and get breakfast. You know, you want me to make the regular order? You know, egg whites, toast, and juice and stuff, coffee. He's like, yeah. I said, well, don't forget your paper, bro. And I just, you know, went down, and next thing you know, about 10, 15 minutes later, she comes down with a paper folded up. I'm like going, what you bring your paper down for, buddy? And he's like, well, all right, Pally, I got you a little gift there. I said, what are you doing with it now? He's like, I want to let you know, I pick up the paper, it's folded up, I open it up, put the thing down, all of a sudden I see this little brown thing hit the floor and bounce in my bag.
Oh.
So basically it hit the floor and I guess it had a little, you know, rubberized consistency to whatever, hit the floor, bounced into his bag, and he looked down and saw this little turd that I put in his newspaper and pick it out, fold it up, put it away, and that was pretty much, you know, that good road story right there.
I guess the news was crap that day.
Oh, yeah, it was, well, he tried to make breakfast a little, you know, a little crappy, but as much as he put it down right there in front of me and I had to get up and move to another, we got it moved to another table, and you know, we left the paper sitting there for somebody else to clean up. But,
oh, my God.
So that was probably, made somebody else's day bright and cheery with more just OJ and whatever. But,
yeah, I could see the bellboy, or the busboy.
Yeah, I really don't know what came of that. No one said anything, and we really just kind of didn't even think about it after he put it on the table right there in front of me. I was kind of I think I lost my appetite. You ready to go?
Oh, God.
It made for interesting times, that's for sure.
Absolutely. So what's next for you, Scotty? What's on the schedule for you?
Well, pretty much right now I'm getting back into wrestling shape and got some independent shows coming up. November 18th in Lenoir, North Carolina, and I got some shows coming up in Orangeburg, and really trying to get back into either, I've been in my MySpace DNA and stuff like that. And I'm really focusing right now on just getting back with the fans a little bit. I had to take about a 2-year hiatus. My dad passed away. I got divorced. And I had some injuries I had to deal with. And all this happened in about a 1.5-year time span. So I just had to, you know, deal with my own issues, do a lot of things, and just couldn't do it being on the road. Had to help my family out. And long story short, getting back, I'm only 35, trying to get back in the ring. And as weird as this sounds, as me and Don were talking last night about some of the situations and things going on in the business, you know, I really hate the politics of the two major companies that are going on, but I mean, where else can you really be seen by more fans than either through TNA or the WWE, which are both have their pros and cons, but I just hate the politics of it. The independents, they're so fluctuating sometimes you don't know which one is. I've had a couple shows canceled and a couple shows postponed and recanceled and repostponed. So each wrestling atmosphere has its own pros and cons, but I really want to get back to the fans a little bit and then maybe make a choice. And had a weird phone call today from Raven, of all people, who I haven't spoken to in a while. We've been playing some phone tag, and he calls me up today and says, "Hey, Scotty, this is Raven trying to get back to you. Got a TV taping today, but I really need to talk to you about something." So, you never know when a phone call that comes from Raven. I know they had a pay-per-view Sunday. They had yesterday off, and I think they were doing their TV tape in Orlando today. But, you know, when you get a phone call from that before a TV taping from Raven, you have no idea what's going on to that wild man's head. Right. So, it could be he called me because he had a concussion and didn't realize he was calling me, or maybe he's calling for help, or maybe he's just calling with a stupid story, who knows. But we'll just have to see what happens with that. And like I said, I actually went down to Jacksonville a week ago to see RVD and his wife, Sonya, and just visit with some friends and had some actually pretty good meetings with some of the guys. The agents, just networking with some of the guys there, and they're seeing me interest from Paul E. about some things. So right now I'm just trying to just get ready because I want to make one last good run with the business. I know I got a lot to give back to it. It's given me a lot. I've been very blessed with it. And so I know I can compete with some of these young guys because I've been taught some good tricks along the way that I think I can actually maybe make some upset sets. I always had that almost breakthrough match or the almost breakthrough feud or the almost breakthrough moment that just never seemed to happen for me in this business. Mm-hmm. And I think that potential is still there, especially now I'm completely 100% right now. I'm weighing 260 pounds. I'm clean as a whistle. I'm happy. I'm healthy. And I'm just ready to get back in the ring. I'm bigger than I've ever been. And put them light on my feet still, which is a good thing. So I think people saw me now, and the first person I bump into at the show in Jacksonville was Big Show.
Yeah.
And when Big Show goes, "Dadgum, Riggs, you're massive." That's, you know, when I'm as big as one of his legs now, finally. And for that guy to say that to me, I think it's like, hey, you know, maybe I'm a little bigger than I think I am.
Yeah.
So. But then, you know, goddamn Lincoln, I was an ass guy, seen the first thing he says to me is, you know, gee, what haven't you been eating? So, you know, so when you get guys throwing one jab at you one way and another jab at you the next way, you know, it's either going to work for you or work against you. So we got to wait and see. But, you know, the only thing I can tell my fans and my friends and stuff out there and any journalists, anybody else that has any other question of where I might show up at, you know, just look at the MySpace, Scotty Riggs is the only thing that I do myself out there. So anybody wonders, that really is me. And I do my best to continue to answer everything myself. And I got a hunt and peck type method, so it's pretty bad. But I do answer all questions myself. I don't have nobody else doing it for me. And just look out for bulletins there and everything else. And I'll let you know I'm going to be at next. And seems to be interest in both areas, but, you know, the biggest thing to me right now is just to get back in that ring, either independence or with those guys. And what's going to make me happy is what I'm worried about right now.
Yeah, sounds good, Scott.
Not worried about anybody else anymore.
Sounds good, and I wish you luck. Check it out, guys. MySpace.com/ScottyRiggs is the website, the official MySpace of Scotty Riggs. Scotty, I want to thank you for being on the program. We're running a little bit over, but, guys, stay tuned. The Irish Whip is coming up next on the Wrestling Radio Network. Brian Alvarez.
Thank you.
I want to thank you for filling in at the last minute for Les, literally the last minute, and... you know,
I appreciate it too, guys. You know, I just want to say very good to you guys and to all the fans that are listening. Keep tuning in to Wrestling Weekly. These guys are great. The Irish Whip, Joni, and JP, those guys come up next. They're fantastic. I did their show a couple weeks ago. Brian, wish you could ask me a few more questions. And my best to Les out there. I hope he starts feeling better. Maybe we'll come back and do a show when he's back sometime soon.
Absolutely.
I'd love to be questioned by him, so.
Absolutely. We'll do that, Scotty.
Thank you, guys.
Guys, keep checking out WrestlingWeekly.com. Find out who's going to be on next week. Stick around. The Irish Whip is coming up.
Now get the drugs! The drugs! Come on, Jim!